Namaste, Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pacharne, Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi, Pasya, Kya, De, Sitarne. Om Agenatuananda, Sya, Gananjana, Salakaya, Chaksur, Unmilitam, Yena, Tasmai, Shri, Gurave, Namaha, Shri, Chaitanya, Manovishtam, Stapitam, Yena, Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shigaro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigaram Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sarivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Svitamscha Hey Krishna Karnasindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Prishabana Sudadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakava Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patidana Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Maha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 18, The Battle Between Lord Vor and Hiranyaksha, Text Number 6. Sa Pudyamana Ari Gurupta Tamarai Gamstra Avra Gam Upalakshya Vitam Todam Mrisham Mira Dat Ambu Madhyat Raha Ahata Sa Parenu Yata Iva. Satu Satu Jamano Rir Satu Jamano Satu Jamano Ridurakatamarai Satu Jamano Ridurukatamarai Samstragra Gangham Upalakshavitam Todam Rishan Nigra Niragat Ambu Madhya Rahahata Sakarinu Yatabhya Tatu Gimano Ridu Rukta Tamarai Gamstragra Gangham Upalakshabitam Todam Rishan Niragat Ambu Madhyad Rahahata Sakarenu Yatabhyaha Satu Jamano Ridu Rukta Tamarar Samstragra Gangham Upalakshabhitam Todam Rishan Niragat Ambu Madhyad Rahahata Sakarenu Yatabhyaha
Of words
Tomarai,
Tomarai,
by the weapons.
Damstra Agra,
on the ends of his tusks.
Gam,
situated.
Gam,
the earth.
Upalaksha,
seen. Bitam,
frightened.
Todam, the
pain.
Mrishan,
bearing.
Miragat,
he
came out.
Ambu,
Madhyat,
from
the midst of the ocean, or from the midst of the water.
Graha,
by a crocodile.
Ahata,
attacked.
Sakarinu,
along with the she elephant.
Yatha,
as.
Ibaha,
an elephant. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Although the Lord was pained by the shaft-like abusive words of the demon, he bore the pain. But seeing that the earth on the ends of his tusks was frightened, he rose out of the water, just as an elephant emerges with its female companion when assailed by an alligator. Purport. The Mayavadi philosopher cannot understand that the Lord has feelings. The Lord is satisfied if someone offers him nice prayers, or offers him a nice prayer, and similarly, if someone decries his existence, or calls him ill names, God is dissatisfied. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is decried by the Mayavadi philosophers who are almost demons. They say that God has no head, no form, no existence, and no legs, hands, or other bodily limbs. In other words, they say that he is dead or lame. All these misconceptions of the Supreme Lord are a source of dissatisfaction to him. He is never pleased with such atheistic descriptions. In this case, although the Lord felt sorrow from the piercing words of the demon, he delivered the earth for the satisfaction of the demigods, wherever his devotees. The conclusion is that God is as sentient as we are. He is satisfied by our prayers and dissatisfied by our harsh words against him. In order to give protection to his devotee, he is always ready to tolerate insulting words from the atheists. Satu dimano ri durukta tamarayar tam stragra gangam upalakshabitam todam rishan niragat ambumadhyad rahahatak sakarenu yatevya. Although the Lord was pained by the shaft-like abusive words of the demon, he bore the pain. But seeing that the earth was on the ends of his tusks, was frightened, he rose out of the water just as an elephant merges with its female companion when assailed by an alligator. Mam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Purustai Buddhay Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swayanti Namane Namaste Sarasakundeve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shinivadi Paskatya Desvitarana. Here it mentions that Krishna has feelings. Generally, in this world, people don't really think that God has feelings. And if he does have feelings, they generally think his only feeling is that he's vengeful. He just wants to take it out. His vengefulness on the poor, helpless, little souls in this world who have had the nerve to disobey him. Therefore, he's always ready with his thunderbolt, and he's looking around. Ah, there is a disobedient soul. Ah, ha, ha. You want another one? How did that feel? bow down, mister. That's what people generally think. God is a very harsh, revengeful God. He's taking out his frustrations on all the poor, helpless souls of this world. Or he's just a man with no face, doesn't have any thoughts, doesn't have any, just kind of watching scoreboards, trying to decide if someone's sinful or pious, whether to throw them into the blazing fire, or to put them in, give them a harp or a horn to play forever. In other words, Satvan Rupa Sarvasha Shadad Bhavati Bharata Shado Yo Mayam Purusha Yo Yat Shrada Seva Saha. That according to one's existence under the three modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. And ultimately faith is all directed towards Krishna. We're seeing God according to our modes of nature that we're situated in. Of course, we can't blame the modes. We've acquired these modes because that's what we wanted. That's what we were attached to. We've gathered the modes together by our past desires and activities, and now we're surrounded by them. And we're looking out, just like in a submarine, one looks out through a peephole, periscope. So we're looking out through these three modes, and that's how we're seeing not only the world, but we're seeing God and everything else also. Vita, Raga, Vaya, Krodha, Manmaya, Mamapashitya, Bhava, Jnana, Tapasa, Putamad, Bhavam, Agata. Being free from attachment, from fear, and from anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge in me, and thus they all obtained transcendental love for me. That if one is in the mode of ignorance, then one will think that there's nothing beyond this cosmic creation. This is reality. There's no greater reality than the earth and the water and the fire and the ether, the air. And as they combine together, we find the endless varieties. Consciousness, feeling, thoughts, as well as all the other gross and subtle manifestations in material nature. They're all just combinations of the gross material elements. So because people are gross, they have a gross conception of life. Because they're grossly surrounded by the mode of ignorance, they think that everything is just a product of ignorance. That by the inconceivable power of ignorance, that earth and water just come together and they form all kinds of varieties. And those are the mode of, and therefore, Prabhupada writes that such persons, obviously, they'll think spiritual life is just a waste of time. The real thing is to get as much earth and water and fire and ether together as possible. Collect it, just put it in your house, put it in your car, just collect it together. And that's your success in life. The more you've collected earth, water, fire, ether, and air together, then the more you're the controller, you've made it. You've gotten the perfection of life. You become the supreme controller of the gross elements of the material world. So naturally such persons will neglect spiritual life. They'll think that these people are just wasting their time in some imaginary God that they've invented because they're not strong enough to face the reality. Therefore they're taking a back door out, imagining some God and praying to him, please give me some more air, please give me some more ether, please give me some more water. And this way they're imagining that God, if there is a God, he'll simply supply the necessary earth, water, fire, and air, and ether that we require here. And for those who are a little more advanced, who can see that there is a subtle, something called subtle, because like in modern society, the New Age people, they believe that there's something beyond earth, water, fire, and air and ether. They believe that there's a mind beyond all these things. They're on the mental platform. And they take the mind as the ultimate objective of life. It's not so important what you do with this gross elements, it's how you feel about what you're doing. That's the important thing. It's your mood of trying to exploit the material nature. If you try to exploit it in a very nice way, we get together, cooperate, exploiting it, then you're a good person. And if you're not cooperative in trying to exploit the material nature, then you're considered to be an evil person. They're on the mental platform. And of course, people on the mental platform, they, when they hear about there's such a thing as a spiritual identity, they think that this is very bad. It's that they've had enough bad experience trying to get people to cooperate here for temporary objectives, and they think if we go to the spiritual world, we'll simply fight there forever. That I have my feelings and mine, and other people have their feelings and mine, and we're always trying to adjust them together, but it never quite works out. So you think the spiritual world is something like that, but it goes on eternally. My mind versus your mind, and we're trying to adjust it eternally. It never quite works out. Therefore, certainly they fear their personal spiritual identity. They think this mental platform is not very nice, although we've arrived at it, but when we were simply dull on the material platform, simply trying to eat and sleep, and not worrying about other things, we didn't have so much anxiety. But now we've arrived at the mental platform, and now we're full of anxiety. Just like the materialist, they have no duality in their mind. Because for them, they know their objective in life is simply to enjoy the senses. They don't hesitate. They're practically trying to arrive at the platform of spontaneous sense gratification. Become a raganuga sense enjoyer. And they have no problem because they're taught like that. That's their conception of life. That as soon as you see something, go for it. As long as it doesn't get you into trouble. Feels good and you just do it. But they can't understand how the devotees, those who are aspiring to become devotees, they have some, what they call, hang-ups. They're hesitant to enjoy their senses, and at the same time they don't appear to be enjoying on the spiritual platform either. They seem to be full of dualities. They're not enjoying materially, and they're not enjoying spiritually. They're caught in the middle. Suffering, wanting to enjoy the gross and subtle senses, not being able to do so, and hearing something about some spiritual existence and not being able to enter into that realm. So the materialists think, just become normal. Don't waste your time in this in-between, like a ribbon cloud with no position in any sphere. Just surrender to your senses before it's too late. And enjoy like a cat or a dog or a hawk. But that's what the materialists think because they have nothing beyond the mental platform. They're a little embarrassed by their mind, but at least they've come to the platform and they're trying to surrender to their mind. They've realized they have a mind and they're busily trying to surrender to its dictates. Although sometimes, due to the fact that they think they've been misdirected, badly educated in religious values, because they had the ill fortune, they think, of hearing about a God and laws of nature and good and bad, they think now they become deviated from the goal of life and they're hesitant to perform acts of sense gratification, and this is the cause of all their problems and sufferings in the material world. If they could only become like a spontaneous animal and enjoy their senses unrestrictedly, spontaneously, then there would be no more problems for themselves or in society. It would be just one happy animal kingdom. Of course, certain animals, they would like to eat other animals. So sometimes you have to ask these animals, please don't eat too many of the other animals. That's modern society. Someone goes and kills 20 people because, and then they say, oh, he had a bad day. His mother didn't love him, so that's why he killed so many people. Ask him to put him in jail for a year or two, and when he comes out, ask him to be, please don't kill any more people. It's, you know, it's a little disturbing to them to get killed. And after killing 20 more people, they say, oh, that is not very nice. So So they can't understand how an animal kingdom, they think everyone should be a nice animal. If you go to the jungle, you can talk to the deer, please be a nice deer. And if you talk to the lions and the tigers, please be kind to the other animals. They probably won't listen to you. Although they're free and natural, spontaneous, they have all the good qualities that the materialists think, still they eat the other animals. And fear of a personal spiritual identity, fear that I'm going to go there, I'm going to be on the mental platform, I'm going to find so many other people on the mental platform. There are some people who like me, some people who dislike me. People who like me today will dislike me tomorrow on the mental platform. And the people who didn't like me yesterday, I'll make friends with them tomorrow. It'll all be a big confusing mess like it is here in the spiritual world. But it'll go on forever. And some people think that this is all crazy. We're not anything. We're just a combination of material nature. And when you're dead, you're dead. Whatever you do here is just a waste of time. You make progress here and it's all ended. You may be ahead of the race at the beginning, but ultimately you lose, you come in dead. Dead last. Therefore, they're frustrated out of the void conception of life. Because they think everything is a waste of time. Why should I do anything? Whatever I gain here is lost, and in the meantime I'm suffering anyhow. Therefore, why prolong the suffering? Just end my existence, let me merge back into the void. Disappear. This is certainly a product of complete ignorance. So we have a little ignorance, we have passion, a mental platform, trying to enjoy the material world. Therefore, the idea of the mind rises. I like to enjoy this way, you like to enjoy that way. We try to make some compromise, how we enjoy together, but it doesn't always work, and therefore there's problems. I want to eat you, that will make me happy. You want to eat me, that will make you happy. And we try to figure out how we can eat each other and make each other happy. I give you my leg, you give me your arm, we munch down to the middle. And the other is dark as ignorance, no intelligence whatsoever, that there is no purpose of life, there is no goal of life. So these are the material concepts of life. And they're all products of the modes of nature, from lust, from this desire to enjoy the material nature, although it's glorified as a very noble objective, keeps the economy running, keeps everyone working hard. It is the basis of love and affection and material existence. Still, it leads to ultimately greed. Because if I enjoy whatever I have enjoyed, then I want to enjoy more of it. And greed eventually leads to anger, because I can't unrestrictedly try to enjoy my senses without either the objects of the senses running out or my body running out, something running out, and therefore I become frustrated eventually that my object of enjoyment disappears. And eventually I become hateful, angry, frustrated. And from that all kinds of other material emotions arise, like illusion, delusion, bewilderment, completely unintelligent ignorance. And then in that ignorance I see everything through the ignorance, or I see everything through the passion, and I imagine that I've understood things properly, I pass judgment on everyone and even God, and therefore I feel justified for whatever actions I take for my own personal enjoyment or to eliminate the obstacles to those enjoyment, including the people who I think stand in my way. But here it says that God is not very much appreciative, because if people are in ignorance, if people are in the modes of passion, then when they decry God, their relation with Krishna, which is ultimately whatever we're doing, we have a relation with Krishna. We think we're acting independently, we think we have some separate existence from Krishna, but all this is Krishna's energy. It all works according to Krishna's direction, under his material nature. And Krishna is in our heart directing us. We can't move a finger, we can't say a word, we can't do anything without Krishna's help. Without a relation with Krishna, nothing happens. That relation is eternal. It's never, can be changed. Only we can forget that relationship. But when we're in the modes of nature, imagining that we have a relationship only with this external energy, gross or subtle, then Krishna is not very satisfied because our relation with Krishna, our loving feelings towards Him, are not manifested. And still we simply suffer in the three modes of nature. Suffer under the modes of ignorance or passion or even so-called goodness or partial goodness in the material world. Krishna wants us to be happy, but we can't be happy in illusion, in our dream world, where we're imagining ourselves to be something other than what we really are, namely this body, watching the horrible, ghastly form of the material nature go through its birth, old age, disease, and death. Kalo smi bharatarshava. Kalo smi shayakrit pravido. Lokansa mahartami hapravita. Pite pithvam nava vishanti sarve. Evasita pratni ke shriyoda. Time I am, Krishna says, the destroyer of all these worlds. I have come here to engage everyone. So destruction is basically what's going on in the material world. Things are created in the hope that it's going to be nice and beautiful. But ultimately, as soon as it's created, it's being destroyed by time. We may be walking in the forest, seeing all the nice flowers, but in the flowers, these red ants and white ants and black ants are fighting, killing each other. The insects are coming by and nibbling on all the nice flowers we're looking at. The animals are coming by and passing all kinds of things on them. So we're only within our naive imagination we think, oh, this is so beautiful and wonderful. Actually, it's a horrible struggle that's going on, and everyone ultimately meets death. And then comes back to struggle again. Mamaivamso jivaloke jivabhutak sanatana manakshastra indriyani prakriti stani karshiti. It's a karshiti. Simply a struggle with the six senses, include the mind, for all, as it says in the Krishna book, dancing with Krishna. But those who are dancing with Krishna's illusory energy, with Maya, they're trying to imitate Krishna. Or we should say, those who are trying to imitate Krishna, they're dancing with Krishna's illusory energy called Maya. And those who are dancing in following Krishna's direction, they're dancing with Krishna in the rasa dance. But the whole world is full of Krishna singing, but everyone is understanding the singing in different ways. Therefore, one has to hear from the devotees glorify Krishna, how wonderful Krishna is, how Krishna has not arranged this material nature because of his dislike for us. He's arranged it simply out of his compassion for us to wake us up to our real existence, which is service to Krishna. As part and parcel, angsas of Krishna, we can't be happy in anything else other than a relationship with Krishna, in a loving relationship with Krishna. Forgetting that, then the material nature tortures us, kicks us. That Bhat Krishna Bahir Mukha Boga Hanatan Vanchatare Hikatastamaya Japatiyadare. That as soon as we turn our face from Krishna, as soon as we start accepting some imaginary, some illusory conception of life apart from Krishna consciousness, then Maya slaps us down. That's her duty, so we stop accepting these illusory conceptions of life, accept the real conception of life, and understand how wonderful and beautiful Krishna is. It is not that Krishna, when we decry Him, when we deride Him, when we deny Him, that He becomes any less wonderful and beautiful. But we simply can't appreciate how wonderful he is, how unlimitedly wonderful he is. Therefore, Maya slaps us, so we come to our senses. Just like a criminal, he's been arrested for his acts of criminality. He's being slapped by the policeman, and still he's saying, "You can't touch me, I'm free to do whatever I want." He's being slapped around by the police force, but he's claiming he's free to do whatever he wants. He can't take one step out of the jail. He can't avoid the punishment from the authorities, but he's claiming he's free to do whatever he feels like doing. So in this world, we're free to do nothing independently of the illusory energy. At every step, the illusory energy is directing us to do things which will simply cause us misery. But still we're claiming we're free, we're making progress, we're doing so many wonderful things in the material world. But actually we're just wasting our time. Being tortured by material nature, not getting the message, jeev jago, gora chandra bole. Wake up, sleeping soul. Try to appreciate how wonderful Krishna is. If you want a loving relationship, then have a loving relationship with the most loving person, Krishna, who is actually capable of doing something positive for you. One may have a loving relationship, or try to have a loving relationship with someone in this material world, but can they stop death? Was Romeo able to save Juliet? She died anyhow. Even if Romeo didn't get... Whatever happened to Romeo? I didn't read the story. Whatever happened to Romeo? Even if he would have lived, he would have died anyhow. No one lives. He couldn't have saved Juliet after some 20, 30, 40 years. Juliet would have turned old. And Romeo said, "Wow, this is not the Juliet I married. What happened to you?" And they both would have died. Who knows what they would have come back. Maybe he would have come back as Juliet and her as Romeo. Therefore, rather having a illusory relationship with the illusory energy, one should try to have a real relationship with a real person who is the real source of our happiness, a real person who can help us. If we ask our mother, just like in the airplane pilot, sometimes they have this black box, so they always have this black box in the airplanes. And when the plane crashes, which it sometimes does, they try to find the black box to see what happened, what the pilots were saying. And they discover that the last words before the plane crashes that the pilots usually cry out is not Hare Krishna. You may be surprised to learn they don't cry out Hare Krishna. They usually cry out, "Mommy!" But their mommies can't save them. It is not possible. But Krishna can save us in any circumstance. He can save us by waking us up from this illusory existence and bring us back to our real state of consciousness, our real identity, so we don't have to suffer repeatedly watching different bodies we enter into grow old, become diseased, and then die. In spite of our best efforts, in spite of our love, concern, in spite of our conferences and all kinds of books we learn, in spite of our education, still the body grows old, becomes diseased, and dies, and we get kicked out into another body, which is not always as pleasant as this one. Although this one may not be very much pleasant, the next one may not be so pleasant. Here we're in rotted age, trying to stay warm. But if we're a tree outside, forget about the heaters. There's no heaters for the trees outside. You have to stand naked as the snow comes down. And no one even thinks about putting any clothes on you. You just have to stay there. There's no tree shop for clothes. You just have to stay there and shiver and hope for better times, which usually don't come in Belgium anyhow. Therefore, this body may not be pleasant, but the next body may be even less pleasant. Therefore, rather than wasting our time here, we should try to develop a relationship with Krishna, find out how he's absolutely good, And how? Because we're not so good, therefore we don't see him as good. Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes. Well, sometimes Prabhupada's a little lenient. Tries to be liberal-minded. There, Krishna says, dwelling all purusholoke. So, there are two kinds of created beings, the divine and the manya. Where to put them? Because they may follow the Vedic rules and regulations. They're following Krishna's directions. Therefore, they're not 100% demoniac. But because they're a basic reason, their motive behind following it is to kill Krishna. Therefore, they are demoniac. Prabhupada gives the example of Bhavananda Group. He was walking up a hill one day. And Bhavananda was helping Prabhupada up the hill. As soon as they got up the hill, Prabhupada threw his hand away and said, "Get away from me, I don't need you anymore." And Bhavananda Prabhu was shocked. And Prabhupada said, "This is the Mayavada concept. You take help from someone until you get up to the Supreme, to the top, and then you throw them away." So that's the Manya. So you very nicely worship the deity, very devotional. And then after you become God, you take the deity and you throw them into the water. Because you don't need the deity anymore. That's the mania. You may apparently be devotional, follow the instructions for some time, until you become the deity, and then you throw the deity away, you take his place. Yes. Yeah, they personally serve you. Yeah, personalists aren't demons. It's one of the, but the Mayavadis are. I mean, personalists, they believe Krishna is God, but they believe that he's not the highest manifestation of God. Mayavadis don't believe in anything. They don't believe that Krishna is God, or even if they do believe that Krishna is God, he's the Lord of the material nature, but they don't believe there is a material nature. They don't believe that there is a Krishna. Ultimately, it's all Brahman. So they give Krishna credit. Narayana Prabhyata. Sankaracharya gave Krishna credit for being the Lord of nature, but ultimately he doesn't believe in material nature. So being the Lord of something that doesn't exist doesn't give you very much credit. If I told you, you're the king of Never Never Land, you're going to be the emperor of Never Never Land. And here is the imaginary key to the palace. Would you very much, wow, I just became king, I'm king of Never Never Land. No, they take you very seriously. You're Never Never Land. So similarly, Krishna being God of a place that doesn't exist, and the fact that he doesn't really exist, doesn't give him very much credit, according to the Mayavadis. But the impersonalists, at least they believe in that there is a Brahman. Brahman does manifest itself as Krishna. The material nature, although temporary, is something. Therefore, they give Krishna some credit. Yes. I didn't mention it because it's bad. No, goodness. Goodness generally means that mixed ignorance and passion. Goodness means that you look at the material world, and as I mentioned, you think it's very nice. The flowers are blooming, the sun's in the sky, it's a nice day, but they don't see the deeper thing that's going on. The little ants are killing each other. So goodness means, if you're in goodness, as Prabhupada said, and you think you're happy and enjoying, that means you're in ignorance. Goodness means ultimately Krishna consciousness. Unless when it's Krishna consciousness, there's no real goodness here. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, it often probably equates goodness with Krishna consciousness. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantarashimad Bhagavatam Kijai Srila Prabhupada Kijai Gaur Premanande.